Blog Talk Radio.
If I knew then what I know now, no, I wouldn't change much of anything anyhow. It was 50-50, and I won the coin toss when you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. Help for HD Live is brought to you by Help for HD International and is made possible by our sponsors, Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. Today, we have an incredible guest with us to talk about very important topics. Dr. Hennig, and you'll have to excuse me because I'm getting over the flu, so I'm a little nasally. Dr. Hennig is the director at the UConn Health Huntington's Disease Program. She has over 30 years of experience as a clinical therapist and has worked with people with HD and their families since 1999. Dr. Hennig provides counseling to people at risk affected by Huntington's and their family members, including pre-symptomatic testing, crisis intervention, supportive counseling, and couples and family therapy, continuing care needs, entitlements, and benefits. She initiated and co-facilitated an ongoing therapy monthly caregiver support group meeting and provides an in-service to healthcare professionals in Connecticut. She has created a statewide HD symposium, which has been offered free to the public for 5 consecutive years. Dr. Hennig is nationally and internationally recognized as an expert in her field of talking to children about HD, which is so important. She has written a book called Talking to Kids About Huntington's Disease, a book for people who know that children or that there are children in the family. This is so amazing to me, and I want to talk about this during the show. This book has been translated into 5 different languages. Dr. Hennig has been the lead coordinator in numerous studies, including the HSG-supported CREST-E and REACH2-HD clinical trials. She is the co-investigator for the CHDI-supported Enroll-HD observational trials. Dr. Hennig is a member of HSG, the Educational Committee, as well as the Credentials Committee, and has served on the HSG Executive Committee. Dr. Hennig serves as a liaison to the local HDSA affiliate in Connecticut and is an advisor to the Huntington's Disease Youth Organization, as we all know as HDO. We are excited to have Dr. Hennig on the show with us today to talk about a couple things with us. And we actually originally started the show as Before You Test, but actually Dr. Hennig has so many amazing things to talk about. I actually have asked her to talk about a couple other subjects, so we're going to jump right in and let her start the show. Welcome, Dr. Hennig. We are excited
to
have
you. Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm excited to be here, and thank you for the invitation.
Yes. Let's start right away. And what are some things people should think about before they test for HD?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. Excuse me. And I think I have to step back and just let people know that it takes a lot of courage to pick up the phone and to make that first call. It's interesting because on my line at work, I have, besides like a caller ID, you know, which sometimes people block, also the date and the time is noted when I get calls. And it's not a coincidence that I'll go into the office on a Monday morning and there'll be some calls from 5 o'clock, you know, or 7 o'clock on a Saturday or a Sunday or in the middle of the night. You know, that's when people feel that they have the courage and they're still, I call it that dance before the chorea. So we know that one of the symptoms of Huntington's disease is chorea, which is a Greek word for dance, you know, dance-like movements. But I think that there's also a dance that happens before. That's when people are kind of putting their toe in to say, am I ready? Am I not ready? How do I know that I'm ready? So I think that, number one, I tell people when I get these what I call cold calls from people saying I'm ready to test, or you know, I leave a message for them and they call me back, is I have to acknowledge that it takes a lot of courage to pick up the phone and do this. Then all of a sudden I'm slowing the person down and saying, okay, but now I want you to think about a whole bunch of things before you then rush in and all the momentum comes. And I think that, you know, the topics that I think are important in terms of what to think about before testing are definitely the insurances, which I'll go over. You know, is the person ready physically and emotionally? And also thinking about who do I tell and how do I tell them? So let me jump back into the insurance. know, people will say to me, oh, yeah, yeah, I've got health insurance and everything's going to be covered. Everything is great. That's one piece of insurance that is discussed and is talked about. Besides health insurance, there's life insurance, there's disability, including short-term and long-term insurance, and long-term disability insurance, and then something called long-term care insurance. And that's really the one I focus on with people, because a lot of times people are working for a large employer and they're getting health insurance. Sometimes they have life insurance. They're offered short-term and long-term disability. But the long-term care is usually separate. And that basically long-term care, people say, oh, I have that. And I say, are you thinking of disability? Oh, yeah, yeah, disability. Well, long-term care is basically a pot of money that says how much care do you need, how much do you want to spend on this care, and where are you going to get your care? Is it going to be in a long-term care facility? Is it going to be home? So those are really things that people, I suggest that they at least get educated. You don't have to have any of these things in order to get tested someplace. Our program right now is offered free to people who are at risk. But, you know, there are many programs that do accept insurance, but sometimes people will pay privately. That health insurance is only one small piece. And I think that people in an HD family really do have a crystal ball. Sometimes they have generations of family members, and you can say, all right, if this is what happens, if this is similar to what my situation is going to be, if I'm positive, when I come down with symptoms, then what are my needs going to be? So we know that people with Huntington's disease sometimes can do all of the six what we call ADLs, which is activities of daily living. They can eat by themselves, bathe, dress, toilet, transfer from a chair, from a bed to a chair, and walk. But a lot of times it's not just that. Can they be left alone? Can they be safe? Are they going to have good judgment calls? That crystal ball is something that it's really important for people to say, okay, I know what to expect. Can I get my needs met knowing what the future might hold for me? And I really suggest to people, find a broker. And people will call me and say, oh, no, I can't do that. I can't tell them there's HD in my family. But you can, especially if there's no paper trail. Because basically, if you are at risk and have never gone to a healthcare provider and talked about Huntington's, you have nothing to risk. And that provider, that broker, is really your advocate. You know, that's the person you need to be honest and say, okay, you know, here's what's going on and here's what might happen in the future. That person's supposed to work for you and say, okay, great, we have no paper trail. Let's see if we can get you covered under different types of insurance, under long-term care insurance. So I think before I go on to the other, is that kind of answer some of the questions in terms of insurance, do you think?
Absolutely, yeah. And thank you so much for explaining long-term care, because I think that it's so interesting, the whole long-term care, because I think we don't realize how much long-term care. I mean, my husband now heading into the later stages of HD, you know, I'm at that stage where he can still that stage you're talking about, but I'm worried about his safety. And I'm looking at places, I'm just blown away, even about adult daycare and bringing someone in the home just for a couple. It's so expensive. We are very
lucky
that we
have long-term care. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Those are all the things that long-term care can cover.
Yeah. Because he was in such a high-risk job being in the sheriff's department, they automatically sent their law enforcement up for long-term care because they're at such risk of getting injured. But most places, like you were saying, Dr. Hennig, they don't set you up for long-term care. It's disability.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
So very important.
That's absolutely right. And I've heard these stories of people saying, well, you know, here's an idea. You go and get tested, and if you're positive, you go to a brand new doctor and you don't tell them about Huntington's. I do not subscribe to that at all. That's fraud. That's medical fraud. You really need to think about these things way before there's ever an issue, way before, you know, if you are an adult and you have adult children, that's a wonderful time for the adult children to get covered before you as an adult are tested. So there's definitely, the more that people can talk about how do we make sure that we are protected, the better off it is. I think that it's really important, as you said, to make sure that people have their ducks in a row. So, and then the next one, you know, is just in terms of being physically and emotionally ready. You know, and that's that dance that people, I've had people years and years call me and just, you know, I'm not unsure what's out there, what's going on, are there any new treatments, just want to touch base with you. And I think that that's great, because I say to people, you know, once I give you this result, if it's positive or negative, I can never take that back. So people really need to feel that they are emotionally and physically ready for all that information. You know, is it the right time? The last section of this is the who to tell and how to tell. When I'm interviewing people, I do talk to them and say, you know, who do you plan to disclose this information to? And people say, well, I thought about it and I'm not going to tell, you know, my affected parent, or there's a certain person in my family that I'm not going to say. And I really suggest to people to think that through well before you're tested. Because again, once you're tested, you're maybe hiding information, especially obviously if it's positive. If you really have that conversation with people in your family, as scary as it seems, then you can be open and honest and be able to say, I'm thinking about getting tested. Do you want to know? And you know, if I tell somebody in the family, if I don't tell you, mom or dad, you know, who are affected, but I tell my sister, and my sister tells her children, and then all of a sudden it's on social media that somebody says, oh, on Facebook, you know, I'm sorry to hear you tested positive. Just to know that that is so, you know, it's very, very common. We have families with lots and lots of different people in the family, and cousins will talk to each other, and information will get back. But if you know from that family member, if you know from mom or dad, yes, I do want to know, and please don't hold it for me, it takes the burden off of the person. So think about who you want to tell and how to tell, and decide well beforehand in terms of being tested.
This is such great information. I hadn't even thought about this. And what about like who you're going to take with you to get the results? I mean, that's
exactly
probably a huge thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, I think it's really important to start talking to your family and friends beforehand. You know, who's the right person? You know, who wants to come? Who doesn't want to come? And let people make that decision so that they can start thinking that through, not just to say, oh, I'm being tested and I need you to come with me. Because that might be hard for a sibling, or it might be hard for a parent. It might be that they're going to say, I want to know, but, you know, I want to know after. Or yes, you know, I mean, and I've had situations where I've had to book a conference room because I've had 15 people in the room. If that's what the person needs, that's fine with me. I don't like when people come by themselves. It doesn't make me feel comfortable. But, you know, if it happens and they say, you know, you can touch base with me, or I'll give you a release of information to speak to somebody in my family afterwards to make sure I'm okay, that's fine. So we run the gamut in terms of this. But again, those are all things that should be discussed beforehand.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, for people who are listening, sometimes I hear this a lot where people just don't even know where to start. You know, they know they kind of made this decision that they want to be tested, but they just don't even know what should I even do first. Is there any like resources out there that people should, to find these answers?
It's a great question. I think for people who have HD in their families, they have seen multiple relatives go through the process. And remember, people base their expectations on those experiences. So, you know, I think that it's again, really important that I tell people, if you have seen one person with HD, you've seen one person with HD. Each case is individual and unique, even within the same family. And there are tons of social, you know, there are resources in terms of social media. I tell people, take that with a grain of salt, because you can find, as you know, so many different things. And there are things that can be really scary. So I'm not saying don't look on the internet, but I think that it's really important that people just take what they need. I certainly don't mind when people call me and say, you know, what should I expect? You know, again, I've been on the phone with people that have just asked me over and over in terms of their expectation. So, I mean, in terms of resources, definitely an educated person in terms of Huntington's disease, in terms of all the things I just talked about of health insurance, it would be good. So that's definitely talking to brokers in their area, picking up the phone also and calling the center that they do want to go to for testing and just asking questions. A really good question to ask for people to ask in almost any situation is, are there questions that normally people ask that I haven't asked yet? That way, you know, it's, oh, yes, you know, people have asked me about this, and, you know, here's the answer to that. So you don't have to know all the questions, but just to say, I really want to know what to expect and what are normally the questions that people ask. And I think that that can be really helpful to people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And so when people, I'm curious on your thoughts about when people are thinking about getting tested, obviously, you know, you may have family and friends support, but there's a different support that the Huntington's community themselves, and I know their families
probably are part of the community, but there is support
right.
that we kind of offer each other. So do you think
yeah.
it's good for someone to go to a support group before they decide to get tested, or do you think that would scare somebody, or what are your thoughts on that?
Right. It really depends on the person. Again, I think at that point, people are already on social media. They're seeing either the experiences of their families. They are, you know, downloading a whole bunch of things on YouTube and looking at all of that. And I think that, you know, and there's other sites, that really great sites like the Huntington Study Group site. Certainly HDO.org, you know, has little videos of different people who've been tested. But people need to remember that that's that person's experience. So, you know, if you are a person who really reaches out for people and wants to hear all these stories, great. You know, then that might be something that you can go and listen to other people's stories. If you're somebody who just says, you know what, I'm going to find out what to expect. You know, am I going to be there an hour? Am I going to be there for three visits? Am I going to be there? You know, who am I going to be meeting with? I think that can help to allay people's fears in terms of I don't know what to expect. The other thing, and I don't want to equate, you know, testing with something else, but think in terms of when you find out that somebody is pregnant, all of a sudden people are giving all this advice. They're telling you the horror stories. Mm. They're telling you the good
mm-hmm.
stories. They're telling you things that you're not even asking to be told. So I think it's very similar that you have to say, okay, this is going to be my experience, and the more I can educate myself, the better it's going to be, because then I can decide what is best. But do remember that a person's, you know, when you hear a story from somebody, it's their experience and it's how they, you know, how they went through their own process. You could be going through the exact same process with the exact same people and come out feeling totally different. It really is very, very unique. So what I say to people mm-hmm. is, you know, seek that out if that's where you find solace, if that's where you find that you want to get support. But know that, you know, what happens to one person does not necessarily mean it will happen to you as well. So I think that that's really important to think about.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And if we can kind of just switch topics, this is a topic that I would, if you have any final thoughts on testing, I'd love to, we could talk about it now, but I kind of want to switch gears over to the talking to your kids
sure.
about Huntington's disease, because this is something
sure.
that so do you have any final thoughts or quite a bit?
So I think, yeah, and we did cover a bit. I think that really it's not so much worrying about what other people are thinking, you know, that if people start telling you what to do, you've got to listen to that little voice inside that says, I just need to kind of figure it out myself. So again, you know, if you have a relationship, if you have a testing center that you know you want to go to, pick up the phone and just say, you know, I've got my questions. Write some of your questions down. Ask that question of, you know, what questions am I not asking you that other people do ask? And jot things down. I think that that's really very helpful. I think it is helpful to, when you go in, to have a support person there, you know, who can actually hear some of the other things or be that extra set of ears to say, well, I don't remember them saying that, so maybe we should call back, or this is what I heard, or did you ask about that? And that person might be a little bit more removed, so or it might be somebody at risk as well, but you can put your heads together and say, you know, let's ask this question, or I didn't ask that question, or I need clarification. So to me, really the communication is a take-home message that I put in bold and underline.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So if we can kind of talk about this, talking to your kids about Huntington's disease, I have three children at
sure.
risk. My husband lives at
yeah.
home. So this is actually a topic that's incredibly, I think, important to talk about for those of us that have
yeah.
children living at home. So let's talk about your book and let's jump into
sure.
this subject for a little while.
Okay. It's definitely, and thank you for mentioning that, it's definitely near and dear to me. Well before Huntington's disease, I worked in oncology and I saw many, unfortunately, especially women with breast cancer who were not telling their children about cancer. So I wound up doing a lot of work with those families. And then when I started to work in Huntington's disease, I saw some similar situations that people were really not talking about this. And a lot of the same situations with the kids just not knowing what's going on or making up stories or not understanding, it was very similar that way. Of course, it's different. I mean, but there are a lot of differences. But there are some similarities that I was able to transfer and say, you know, I think people really need to discuss this a little bit more. So I started in 1999, and I began to lecture about talking to kids regarding Huntington's disease in about 2000. And then I decided, you know, just to take some time and to write down the talk basically into a booklet. So in 2003, the booklet came out. It is available right now. It's available online. It's not online, but you can order it online. And you just have to Google Talking to Kids About HD. So the actual website is www.talkingtokidsabouthd.com. I do want to let people know that there's lots of resources. HDSA has some really great resources. There's other people who have written information about talking to kids. So whatever you can get your hands on, I think is really going to be helpful, because it is something that, you know, when I do these talks about talking to kids, people, you know, the light bulb goes off and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I should do this. And then a lot of times people say, you know, I didn't do this and now it's too late. And I say to people, it's never too early and it's never too late. So, you know, now's the time that people can say, here's your jumping off point, that you say, I went to a lecture or I got a book, and it talked about, you know, being open and honest, especially with children, and I want to be able to have this conversation. So there's never a too late time. You can always make the opportunity in terms of talking to kids. And again, I do have a plug in terms of HDO.org and just the HDO organization. We do camps, and we're having our third annual North America camp in Maryland, and it has been fabulous. As I said, I've been doing this for 17 years, and the 4 or 5 days, you know, 4 days at camp just blows me away. Sometimes some of these kids, and you know, just in terms of age, I think it's like 15 to 23 in terms of the age group. Some of these people, the kids, have never seen another person who has gone through HD in their family, and they leave after 4 days with this incredible closeness, and they're all talking about HD, and they're fine. Yeah. You know, they're coping with this as much as we as parents want to say, I'm going to shield my child from this. That's not real. That's not realistic. And it's out there and it's not going away, unfortunately, anytime real soon. So these kids are resilient and they do want to talk about it, and they feel so much better being able to cope knowing that there's people listening. And that's yeah. really the force in terms of this.
They are an amazing group, that's for sure. I sit and I talked to Chandler. I was able to sit with her a couple months ago, and it is amazing what HDO is doing for these children.
Absolutely.
That are living at risk. And you know, it's interesting. I know, having three kids, I have a girlfriend of mine, and her husband has been passed he passed years ago. And her four children are now adults. And I talked to her a lot about when my kids were young, about talking to my kids about Huntington's and you know, what age should I start doing this? And she said, you know, I thought one thing some advice she gave me was so brilliant, because she said, I never lied to my kids. And I sat them down and I said, I will never lie to you. If you have any questions, you ask me, and I will always tell you honestly and truthfully. And when her husband was in the final stages, one of her daughters was away on the East Coast at school. We live on the West Coast. And she called her mom and she said, she was flying home to say goodbye to her dad. And she said, is dad still alive? And she said, yes. Yeah. And she goes, Mom, are you lying to me? Because I just have this feeling, if he's still alive, I want to say goodbye. And she said, have I ever lied to you about Huntington's disease?
Right.
And
right.
she said, no, you haven't. And she said, I'm not lying to you now. You will see your dad. And so I think that hit me so hard, because I thought, being open and honest with her children in that moment where her child was in so much distress because she wanted to see her dad, she trusted her mom because her mom never lied to her.
Right, right. And for the people listening who say, oh my gosh, you know, I did, and use that word lie, I'm going to change it around a little bit and say, you did this, you told them information to protect them. So I do have people who say, you know, to me, oh, I told my children they'll never get this, even though they're at risk. And again, you know, I think that it's just the mindset that you say, my goal at that time, I did the best job I could at that moment. And at that moment, I kicked into, I need to protect them. But you can always go back and say, you know what, I found information, or I was hoping to protect you. But the reality is that I'm going to be truthful and I'm going to give you all this information that you need. So again, even if their past history says, this is how you did it, you can change it. You can fix it. You can can go back and say, you know what, I was protecting you, but I don't know the answer, and I don't know because you're at 50% risk. I hope that you're not, you know, that you don't have this gene, and I hope that if you do, that there's going to be a cure really soon, but I don't have that information. But I will let you talk to people who have, you know, who can educate us on Huntington's disease, and we can talk about, you know, when you feel that it's the right time to be tested, obviously after they're 18, if they're not symptomatic. So I think that your story is a great story. I know that there are some people who are like, oh, great, you know, I lied. And again, I would reframe that too. I did the best job I could at the time. I was protecting them, but I can move forward and make this different.
Absolutely. And we do as parents, we want to protect our children. I look at my three children and I want to just want to protect them from Huntington's. And I always say that's one thing I can't protect them from. It's so, as a parent, it's so hard. But you know, I remember when my brother was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis when I was young, and my mom, you know, we didn't talk about it for a while. And I remember as a child wanting to know, and I was young, you know, wanting to know about my brother and wanting to know.
Right.
And you know, I think children, I think you're so right. Children are so resilient and they want to know information. If not, they're making it up possibly on their own, right? Or like you were saying, they're going on social media and trying to find out.
Right.
And that could be scary.
Or they're hearing it from somebody else. That's exactly it. And I think that it is really important, you know, you said in terms of wanting to protect them. We want to protect them for so many things. So when we send them off to college or when they're going out, you know, to the mall for the first time, all we can do is to give them the tools and say, okay, you're not going to talk to strangers. You're not getting into anyone's car you don't know. You know, you're in terms of educating them about alcohol and drugs. And we give them the tools and the foundation. And we hope that they make good judgment calls. And I think that that's also very similar in terms of Huntington's disease. We give them the facts. We give them the information. And we say, if I don't have the information, you can talk to an expert who does know. Or, you know, it might be one of those things that we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but you know what? We're going to both not know together until the future happens. So we can do advocacy. We can, you know, get out there and spread the word about awareness. We can do so many things to be proactive with the things that are in our control. And that sometimes makes people feel that they're not so helpless, like what you were talking about, that you can't protect them from this. And you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. But we can do a lot of other things that will be proactive.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. That's a good note. And please, anyone who's listening, we will actually post this link on our web, on the show page, as well as on the social media, all their show pages, the link to Dr. Hennig's book, Talking to Your Kids About Huntington's Disease, and we will make it so you guys, it's available for you guys to find at the conclusion of the show. I'll make sure that I post all of that for everybody.
That's great.
So I actually, go ahead, Dr. Hennig, were you going to say something?
No, that was great. Thank you so much. Again, there are lots of different places to get resources, but if I'm one of them, then that's great, and I've reached a few more people. I have people who will come up to me who will say, you know, I purchased a book in 2003, and I still have my copy tattered and torn and bookmarked and dog-eared, and, you know, it means a lot that people are really referring back to this, or they'll lend it out and you know, get it back, and there's little notes in the margin. So I think that it's, you know, I'm hoping that it's a great tool. There are a lot of resources out there, but, you know, I think anytime you can help your child by reaching out and finding out information, it's going to be great.
Yes, absolutely. So I was able to attend HSG this year. My Vice President of Health for HSG International, Katrina Hamill, and I went and flew out to Nashville. And we actually, it's interesting, we didn't go to any talks really, but we ended up in the room when Dr. Hennig was talking, and both of us were sitting at the table, and we were just blown away. You know, people can test for free in Connecticut, and all of these things that Dr. Hennig and the people in Connecticut have done for that state is amazing. And I told Dr. Hennig, we need a Bonnie Hennig in every single state. But one thing that you did talk about when we were during the HSG that Katrina and I both walked away and thought this is such amazing information, is tips on a successful clinic visit. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Thank you so much. It's wonderful. I've heard such good feedback. But, I mean, my feeling is it's certainly not me. It's not my lecture. It's the topic, as you said. And I think it's really important for people to talk about being prepared. In the talk that you're referring to, I did talk about some of the issues we covered here. But a big part was really what happens after testing. And I really think it's important for people to continue to be connected to a healthcare team, especially a healthcare team that knows how to treat HD, that are familiar with people who have Huntington's disease. So, and the biggest issue that I get from caregivers is, A, that sometimes they can't get the person into the HD program, you know, later on, and B, when they do come in, the patient tells the team, when asked how is everything, the patient with, you know, who is either symptomatic or asymptomatic will say, everything is fine. And you look over at the caregiver who is sitting absolutely exhausted in the corner, shaking their head, no. So I think that probably what you're referring to is really the tips in terms of those follow-up visits. One of the things that I did talk about, again, is after testing, and I'm, you know, making the assumption that this person is positive, is finding out what services the center there offers. You know, you talked about all the things that we do. There are lots of clinics around the country that will offer many of those types of counseling and assistance. So, again, it's really finding out what will my insurance cover if it's a center that will take insurance. You know, are there other things that other people that they can be referred to? You know, is there somebody in the Department of Social Services or Social Security that they should start talking to? Are there concrete services? You know, one of the things that I found out in Connecticut is that there are a couple of very small towns that have volunteers that drive people to medical appointments and will go in and help them fill out paperwork. You know, I mean, when you sort of shake fantastic. The bushes and you see what it is fantastic. And when you shake the bushes and you see what might be out there, it's about really asking, you know, the senior center or the social services in the town, what services are out there? What can we rely on? So I think, you know, number one, it's finding out a little bit of information in terms of, you know, those concrete services. And then I think really what you're referring to is some of the tips for the follow-up visit. So, you know, especially if the caregiver maintains the person's schedule, the person with HD schedule, there might be some things that can be helpful. Number one, I suggest is don't keep reminding the person about the HD appointment too early in advance. You know, again, if the person who has the positive gene is working and it maintains their own schedule, it can be more difficult. But really the people who sometimes have a harder time coming in are the symptomatic people who are, you know, relying on their caregivers to meet their needs. So again, don't remind them too early. You don't want them to perseverate that. You don't want them to think about this over and over and really start getting anxious. And when you do remind them, and it might be actually on the way into the clinic, you know, it could be helpful to tell the person what you're going to discuss. And again, you don't need to go into details or say to the person, you're impossible to live with, and no, that's what I'm going to say. But, you know, explain that they might feel, that the person with HD might feel that everything is fine, but there are times that it really isn't, and it's really important to let the team know this. So again, this is sort of so that it's not a surprise. So also, and in that same vein, I think it's really important for people who are really having a difficult time with a person with HD to bring an extra support person. And so many times I hear, well, there's nobody available. You know, my adult children are all busy. They live far. You know, I don't have anyone. And I think that it's really like it takes a village. There are so many people who I talk to who will say, you know, I just wish that they would call me because I want to be able to help. So in this situation, as we do know, sometimes a person with HD will take a lot of that anger, that displaced anger, and put it right onto that main caregiver. It could be a spouse. It could be a significant other. It could be an adult child. And they're the ones who are getting the wrath of all of this. And sometimes if there's just another support person there, the person with HD will kind of hold themselves back a little bit and not lash out too much. So especially if it's going, you know, in the car to the clinic and coming back, it might be helpful to have that extra person there, even if it's just a buffer. I think that that's, you know, can be really, really helpful to just have somebody around to give another, you know, to hear again what's going on so that they can say, well, you know, this is what I heard the doctor say, but also just kind of take that edge off. We also know, and I think I got a lot of people who are nodding their heads, that sometimes people with HD prepare for their visits. So they will start doing their tandem walking, which is like the tightrope walking, a couple of days beforehand. They'll start asking you what the date is. They'll do their counting backwards by sevens and practicing, you know, naming animals or certain words that begin with certain letters, because they have that what we call a practice effect. They certainly know what to expect during some of these visits. And I tell caregivers, don't worry about that. We know that people practice. We know that the way that they look sitting in that exam room is very different sometimes than sitting at home and having, you know, discussions at home. So don't worry so much that, you know, they're practicing their finger taps and they're going to be better at it. Those are just numbers. So that's not going to matter. What really is very important is that the caregiver, the person who is coming with the person with Huntington's disease, is very honest with us and is honest in front of the person with Huntington's disease. And I say that because sometimes I'll get that call, and it's very, very hard when I get a call from a caregiver who is either coming in or just came in and says, you know what, he said that everything was fine and I didn't want to say anything and please don't tell him I called, but, you know, things aren't fine. That's really hard for your healthcare team to do anything. Right. So I can't call the person with Huntington's disease and say, hey, you know, have you punched any walls lately? Because you said everything was fine, but I'm just checking in. You know, and I don't mean to make fun of it, but it puts us in a bind. But if you can say, you know what, things aren't always fine, that opens up a door. And then what I'll get back from caregivers is, oh, I could never do that because he's going to get really mad at me. And my answer to that is, my guess is that he's really angry at home anyway, and you're all walking on eggshells. And the only way you can change this behavior is to stop this spinning wheel, is to really put something in this spinning spoke and say, I need to do this different. So, again, it takes a lot of courage as a caregiver to do this, but to be able to sit there and say, he's saying it's fine, but, you know, everyone is walking on eggshells and we just don't know what mood the person's going to be when they get out of bed. So I think that, my whole, you know, basis of this entire interview is really that word communication underlined and highlighted. The more that you can be honest with your healthcare team, the better it actually is going to be. And then, you know, the other thing is that, you know, that I do talk to people in the office about sometimes that behavior that does seem a little bit more out of control. And I know it's very, very difficult. You know, sometimes people will use the healthcare team as a threat. If you don't calm down, I'm going to call the healthcare, you know, your doctor. Mm-hmm. If you don't calm down, I'm going to call 911. Those were not punishments. We're here to help people. So I say to people, if that's what's happening and you feel so desperate, then tell the person, you know what, now's one of those times that you're out of control and I'm going to pick up the phone and give the program a call because I'm having a difficult time. Number one, first of all, get yourself safe. You know, if somebody is really out of control, have your cell phone, get yourself out of the house, get yourself to someplace safe, and if need be, you call 911. It's not a threat. At that point, if you feel that, you know, there's something where the person is out of control, you need to pick up the phone and call 911. But again, don't use the healthcare team, the healthcare professionals as a threat. Say, this is one of those times. And what I'd say to caregivers is tell the person, this is what I'm going to do. You can be on the phone with me as well, or you don't have to. So you're not giving them a choice of should I call or should I not. You're giving the person with HD the option to say, you can be on the phone with me, but I'm going to tell them what I see. You can tell them what you see, or you don't have to. And I think that really kind of sets a very different tone than if you don't. It's kind of like, you know, I wait till Daddy gets home. Well, what happens? You know, maybe nothing when Dad gets home. So don't use this as a punishment, but really, you know, use that information to try to help you to better understand the behavior and hopefully get some of those things addressed. And just finally, in terms of the caregivers, is, you know, be kind to yourself. You've got a really, really hard job. And I think it's really important that, you know, after these visits, which can be exhausting for a person with HD, you know, their sleep might change. They might be cranky on the way home. They might be impossible. They might give you the silent treatment. But just know that those things might happen and that you need to give yourself a little bit of respite. You know, go for a walk. do some breathing and meditate, you know, whatever you want to do, read a good book, but take care of yourself. And as a caregiver, stay away from those bad things. Stay away from alcohol and drugs and all those other things that numb you. Find your support system. Find people that will help you and understand what it feels like to be a caregiver. I think that those, I really, really want to strongly emphasize that you have a very, very hard job as a caregiver, and we get that. And you need to figure out ways to recharge your battery as well.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. This is all such good information. You know, sitting here being a caregiver, I'm like, everything you're saying, I'm like, yeah, I've done that. So
yeah.
It's okay
yeah.
for your listeners. We've all done that. You know, we've all,
of course.
Chances are we have used you guys as a threat, and we have,
oh,
and you're
yeah.
right, we shouldn't,
right.
you know. It's so funny. This has been very enlightening for me, especially where I'm at in caregiving. I'm like, yes, I've done that. And we are, and I like the caregiver. We are going to make mistakes, and we do have to know that
absolutely.
It's okay. We're all making
absolutely.
Mistakes, I'm sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, people will feel guilty. I yelled back at him. I didn't mean to. I get frustrated. Mm-hmm. Of course. This is not what you signed up for. This is not what the expectation was. And you're grieving, you know, and there's this loss that you're grieving,
yeah.
very different than somebody who was there and then suddenly dies. This is being that person being taken away bit by bit, and it's very,
mm-hmm.
very hard, and not a lot of people put enough emphasis on that, you know, in terms of the caregiver. So, yes, be kind to yourself. Know that we all do that. We all yell back. We all make the threats. We all, you know, want to numb ourselves. But know that you can change that behavior going forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you say, oh,
mm-hmm.
this is how I do it, but that, you know, you can
mm-hmm.
change that. And have a good relationship with your healthcare team. I've had more than one time where people say the person won't come in. And I say, okay, you come in. You know, you can come in and sit down and talk to, you know, the doctor and the nurse practitioner and myself. We can give you tips. You know, you put that time aside. Come in even without the person
mm-hmm.
with Huntington's disease, so that we can at least give some support to you.
That's so awesome. You guys are awesome in Connecticut. I'm blown away by what you guys have, and I think you guys are fantastic. And I definitely, we've always thought at Help for HD that you are fantastic. So do you have any final thoughts before we go into headline news and wrap the show up?
You know, I think, again, just that there's, as you said, really, Katie, there's no mistakes. There's no, even though, you know, I wrote a book and there's other books out there for caregivers and advanced stages and all kinds of stuff, there is no playbook. And then once you think you've got it, something changes and then you don't got it again. So I think that,
right.
you know, the more that people can have communication with their healthcare teams, I think the better off it's going to be. You know, get to know the person who's on the other line, you know, who's on the line, the other end of the phone from your healthcare center. And yes, and you're very kind in terms of what we can offer, but there are lots of other centers, and there's lots of other people
yeah.
who really care about this population. Get to know them. And if there's a problem, talk to that person. Like, you know, I just want to make sure that you know, or I'm feeling, you know, that maybe the care, you know, that he needs more care, or, you know, there's something else. So really have that conversation, and just think, you know, that the buzzword is communication. When you feel that red flag, that feeling of, you know, something isn't sitting right, talk to someone, reach out. And again, one person's experience is their experience. So you might need to get lots of different experiences so that you can figure that out. I heard that really clear in terms of the HDO camps that keep people like, well, wait a second, I was told X. And it's like, no, that's not what, you know, what happens in our house. So it really is great to be able to reach out to people and get lots of different opinions. And when you hear something that you don't like, go someplace else and get in and find out more information. It might just be that was that one person's experience, and that there might be some other answers out there or other ideas. But, you know, I do hope that it is helpful. And I think that, you know, people do have the strength to be able to walk through, you know, walk with Huntington's disease and not fight it. And I've seen that over the 17 years I've been doing this, that people really have been able to turn around and say, I need to walk with this. I need to cope different, you know, with Huntington's disease, whether they're the person or the family and caregiver or somebody at risk. So there are definitely ways that people can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hennig, for coming on the show today. It was a great show full of information. I will be posting all the links that we got to Dr. Hennig's publications and for all of you guys. So they will be easy and available on one click. And so just a couple headline news stories that came through this week was one, Wired published an article on genetic modifying humans, which is the new CRISPR. How does it work? This is a great article about CRISPR-Cas9. CRISPR is a genetic editing technique, and although we are many years away, it has the potential to eradicate serious conditions. It was a great article, and not only was Huntington's disease specifically mentioned in this article with other diseases like cystic fibrosis, but they also got quotes from the amazing Dr. Ed Wild. So to find this article, you guys can go to, I will post this, it's long, but it's wired.co.uk/article/CRISPR-Cas9. This is a really exciting new kind of technology out there, but it is far away, but it's definitely something we want to watch close. Another article that came across on Digital Journal is this new kind of thing that we've seen social media like crazy, and it's being talked about a lot, especially amongst the JHD community, is the CBD oil. DigitalJournal.com actually just wrote an article. I guess they saw over social media a video of the beautiful Erin Wade, who suffers from juvenile Huntington's disease, and has kind of shown what has happened since she has started her on CBD oil. So that is also a really great article on digitaljournal.com. I will also post that link up for those of you who want to read that article as well. If you tune in next week, we're going to have a special show. It's going to be hosted by Sharon Thomason, and it is going to be a special Valentine's Day show, and we are going to talk about kind of the love we have as being a family disease, and all the different types of love we have in Huntington's disease as far as caregiving and different things on that. So that will be a fun show. It's a patient advocate show. So we will have different patients, caregivers, and advocates on for then. And then the following week, we will have a Louise Vetter from HDSA coming on talking about TrialFinder. So tune in next week, same time, same place with Sharon. And until then, everyone have a safe night.